Chapter 12. It should have been a good omen. Jack's success felt like a turning point in my life. But the next day, the real estate sign went up in front of our house. The door to my father's office was closed. "Don't bother him," my mother said. "He's working on his resume." "I don't think we should move," I told her again. Mom didn't say anything. She picked up the bucket of kitchen scraps and headed outside to the composite pile. I followed her. My mother had a vegetable garden that was picture perfect. Neat rows, no weeds. It was a place of order, and I think it was one area of her life she had control over. She dumped her garbage into the composter and mixed it with dirt. "You and Marina are a good pair, I can see that, but you're not going to win. If you keep at it, you're just going to get into more trouble. Steve and I don't want to see that." "But I don't want to be like him," I said, pointing at my old man bent over at his desk by the window. "I don't want to go through life feeling whipped." I was still feeling pretty hostile towards my father. My mom was stirring the compost in front of her. She stopped. I knew I had said the wrong thing, and I was ready for her to give me a lecture. Instead, she turned and slapped me hard on the face. "You don't talk like that about your father," she snapped at me and then walked away. My face was stinging, and I felt a mix of guilt and rage. So this is what it finally came down to. My parents, who always tried to be my buddies, were turning against me. They didn't like me trying to fight for what was right because they had lost before. They wanted me to be wimped out quitter like them. I didn't want to go to work. The wind was light and out of the south. I got my wetsuit, rigged my board, and headed north on my sailboard. On my windsurfer to Marina's house, I sailed east, then northwest, back towards my side of the shore, trying to disregard the grotesque, smoke-spewing finger of the smokestack. The sting of my mother's slap stayed in my head the whole way. My life at home was falling apart. I was thinking I could live without them. Let them move. I'd figure out some way to stay on here. Maybe I could live without them. Maybe I'd be better off. Up ahead, I saw a bunch of trucks parked on the government wharf. The place had been pretty dead ever since the fishing gave out. In the old days, quite a few families used to make a living from going out to sea and catching cod and hake and flounder. Then, slowly but surely, there weren't as many fish as there used to be. The wharf had been put in with the government bucks in the 70s to try and bring things back to life. But it never worked. You couldn't bring back the fish by building a new wharf, so it had been pretty deserted for a long while. I came in close and a couple of guys waved to me, but it didn't wave back. I knew that something was wrong here. I hadn't heard anything from the locals at the gas station about the wharf opening up again or about fishing being on the upswing. It was something else, and I knew I wasn't good news. I didn't have to be a genius to put two and two together, to realize that the big concrete wharf went out into the deep water of the harbor. It was only a mile or so from the landfill. You could bring a barge down any number of rivers to the ocean, then down the coast and into Rocky Harbor, straight to here. That way you didn't have to transport toxic waste on highways or on railway tracks that go through people's backyards. Out of sight, out of mind. It was all part of some grand plan to turn Rocky Harbor into the waste-burning capital of the East Coast. Marina must have seen me coming because she was there on the shore to greet me. She gave me a big hug, and for a few seconds I felt like someone had waved a magic wand and taken all my worries away. But for me and this crazy girl, it seemed that passion always had to play second fiddle to business. I had almost forgotten why I had came here or what I had just seen at the wharf. "I called the lab," she told me, "and said I needed the dead bird's back as evidence. The guy I talked to before just put me through to his supervisor. That turkey told me they had disposed of the mercancers, that it was standard procedure. We should have thought of that before, I guess. But he also told me that they had made some kind of mistake with the lab report, a mix-up or something. He said that the report was wrong, just a goof-up. He offered to pay me the money back. My mom was right. It's not going to work. I looked over at Jack and his makeshift pen, thinking about how great it was to see him fly yesterday. And I thought of myself yesterday, out of the waves with the wind in my face, having the time of my life. It's crazy, I said. We've got too much against us. We're not going to get anywhere. Marina seemed shocked. What? Are you ready to give up? And I suddenly felt totally embarrassed. My head did a perfect 180-degree spin. I tried to fake a truly confident smile and shook my head. We're in this together, right? Yeah, I think so. I was looking at her and wanted to say a whole bunch of stuff. I wanted to say that she was the best thing that ever happened to me, but I just couldn't bring myself to say it. Instead, I said something safe. You really like a good battle, don't you? She shrugged. Well, I was always fighting my battles alone until you came along. Really? Back in Culverton, after my dad got sick, I tried to organize a demonstration against Dial Chemical. I knew it was their fault he was sick, and it just wasn't him or the other workers. They'd been dumping in the river for years, but too many kids in school had parents who worked there. I couldn't get anything off the ground. I couldn't even get some of the guys who kept trying to put moves on me to get into it. Nobody cared. I wish I'd been there with you. Thanks, but I don't think one more person would have made any difference. I went to the factory with a sign. I walked around by the main gate. I watched as all the men who used to work with my father drove by me and either ignored me or cursed at me. I don't think they knew who I was, but they didn't care. It didn't do any good at all. But I think I learned something. What? Well, it was like the guy Gibson. There are a lot of people out there that don't want to hear the truth, especially if it involves their jobs. They think anybody who complains or raises a fuss does it just because they want attention, just because they're troublemakers. They can't understand that some people really care. I know that now, I said, and I thought it was pretty strange that once again here I was with this girl I was head over heels in love with, and all we ever did was have these heavy conversations about all the problems with the world. What I really wanted to do was suggest that we go off somewhere and just make out. But that wasn't the way it was going to be. We have to go over Gibson. We have to go the next rung up the ladder. The regional authority, my father says it's like talking to a concrete wall. Well, the wall might have to listen. This authority thing is made up of mayors and county councillors, and they're elected. They at least have to listen. Ed Kellers, the guy who's elected from here, he was an old friend of my father's when they were growing up. My father says Ed will listen. He already phoned him, and Ed agreed to see Dad today. He just lives down the road, and he's coming over for lunch. Ed knows my dad's pretty sick. He couldn't say no. You want to join us? Sure, I said. I checked my watch and was reminded of the fact that I should have been at work over an hour ago. But first I have to use your phone and lie like hell to my boss at the gas station.